So, thank you for coming to my talk. It's about... Okay, I forgot to change the title apparently. I had to redo the slides because of some user error, and apparently I didn't redo the title properly. It's not about service discovery, it's about developing host applications. Sorry for that. Yes, it's my first time FOSDEM and also my first conference talk, so I'm a bit excited. So, please. Thank you. So short introduction about me. I'm Florian from Germany. I work at Innovex. We're an IT service house, and I'm a senior embedded systems engineer. I started 8 years ago with mainly with embedded Android, went on to doing C++ on embedded Linux and real-time systems. And the last couple of years I started with Zephyr. I still consider myself being a neophyte, so I'm not that experienced. And I thought some feedback from a newbie would be a bit useful for the project. And also, hopefully other newbies can learn one thing or two. So on the agenda, we look in the first half at the basics, mostly the protocol stack and the GUT protocol. Yeah, I'll explain it later. And then we look at using Bluetooth Low Energy in Zephyr, the APIs and what tools are available. Some terminology clarification. I've called the talk developing host applications, but that's not proper Bluetooth terminology. The experts will already know or be confused by what I meant by it. But laymen usually don't understand the word central device. So what I meant by host is a central device, and yeah, clients are peripheral devices. Central devices, these are the devices which usually control the connection in Bluetooth Low Energy. A peripheral device does some advertising and says, hey, I'm here, you can connect. And the central device is the one who does the connecting. Usually it's a pretty powerful device like a laptop or a smartphone, and it's less resource constrained than the peripheral device. And yeah, that reflects on the protocol design later, because most logic resides or should reside on the central device. And then we have the peripheral devices, which are usually resource constrained, and they are low cost, high volume devices, usually, like headphones, mice, or other input devices, or even card terminals. They are designed to be relatively dumb from a protocol standpoint, so they can be built with few hardware. So how does BLE work? The spec is pretty huge. I've checked the core specification for 5.4, and it has over 3,000 pages, and I didn't read all of them. And we have several protocols in Bluetooth Low Energy. There's the L2CAP, the Logical Link Control and Adaptation Layer protocol. Then there's the HCI protocol, which was mentioned further in the Bluesy talk. There's the protocol that's spoken between a Bluetooth controller and the application processor if they are separate. Then there's the generic access profile that's basically advertising. And then we have the attribute protocol and the generic attribute protocol. These are the protocols for transferring actual data once a connection on the GUT layer was established and devices start talking with each other. For example, the generic access profile is used by called iBeacons by Apple. These are just using advertisements and saying, hey, I'm here, I have this ID, and all other devices can receive the advertisements. But if you have a Bluetooth mouse or something, then you're usually using the attribute protocol to send datagram messages between the devices. And I will focus most on the generic attribute protocol, because that's the thing you will interact with as a programmer if you work on a Zephyr application. The GUT protocol is a client-server protocol. The peripheral device is usually the server, so the central device or smartphone, laptop or something, it controls the connection, But from a data transfer standpoint, the peripheral device is the server. It serves the data. It can be the other way around in some applications, so it's not always like that. But in my experience, as limited as it is, it's usually the way I've written it here. So one word about UUIDs, the Bluetooth Special Interest Group, it really loves UUIDs. They use it to identify everything by it, type information and object identity for the most part I had to do with. But the 128 bits of a UUID are quite big, and we have a protocol that's designed for low energy. So what do we do to reduce data rate, the amount of data we have to transmit? The solution is to have one big UUID, which is taken as a standard UUID, and you only send 16-bit or 32-bit portions instead of a full 128-bit portion. And I've marked it. I hope you can see it on the slides in different colors. The first part of the big UUID are substituted by smaller parts. So every time I will talk about a UUID which comes from the standard, it's usually a part of this big UUID. So we start with the attribute protocol. As I said, it's a client-server protocol. Everything is indexed via a 16-bit handle, so I have an attribute on my server, on my attribute server. And if I want to retrieve the data, I have to say, give me the data for this handle, or write it. The attribute data consists of the handle, a type, which is a UUID, a value, which is random data, and a number of permission bits. We have basic operations in at the read and write, I think, are self-explanatory. We receive and send values. And we have also notify and indicate. Notify is when this, the client instructs the server to send updates. So, for example, I have a Bluetooth tracker or something, and I want to receive every changed value, then my client application, my central device, instructs the server, the peripheral device, to notify the other end of the connection on updates. And there are also indications, which are basically the same. But indications require the client to acknowledge each update. So that's what you probably want if you have some critical applications like heart rate monitors or something. That ensures that data updates are not lost. Then we go on to the generic attribute protocol. That has two building blocks, basically. We have services and we have characteristics. Services are, in effect, a bunch of characteristics grouped together. So when I connect to a device and ask it, do you support this service or do you have this service, then I know all the characteristics for this service are available. Services are identified by UUIDs. So you don't ask for a service by its name or plain text or something, but you have to give the device the name. And these are also protected by permissions. And characteristics are basically a container for values. They are also identified by UUIDs. There are several standard characteristics that have a standard UUID, but you can also create your own services and your own characteristics with big 128-bit UUIDs. And there is some metadata available for characteristics called the client characteristic configuration descriptor, which communicates to the GUT server that it should enable notifications for the values associated with this characteristic. Everything is built on attributes we looked at before from the ATT protocol, and basically you have a database on the at server, which is a big list of attributes in the at sense, which all have a handle. And now you have to associate your handle with a service you want to interact with, or with a characteristic you want to read or write from the server. So you have to establish a mapping. The mapping may differ between devices and sessions, but for efficiency, they can be cached. So if I have a proximity service or something like that, when I always know that the devices always provide the same handle for the same characteristic, then I can assume that it's cached. But Zephyr doesn't support this right now, but the standard specifically says they can be cached. So we want to build a central device with Zephyr. So we just have to enable the module in our project conf and we are basically ready to go. We have to enable Bluetooth, the Bluetooth subsystem. Then we say we want a central, and a central is usually most useful with a GET client combined, so we can enable it. But for some applications, if you only want to interact with iBeacons, for example, you don't even need to enable the GET client. So in general, a startup looks like we just call in line 2 the Bluetooth enable function. For simplicity, I've chosen the synchronous version of it because you can pass in a callback, so it gets initialized asynchronously and the callback is called if we're done. But for this hello world type of application, it's not necessary. Then we can just start scanning. We do a passive scan here. There are a couple of other scan options. And we also pass a callback function here. And important, you do a sleep forever, because one of the mistakes I did a couple of times was do a simple endless loop there. But we're already multi-threaded because the Bluetooth subsystem is multi-threaded, and if we do just an endless loop, it will block the main thread, no other thread will run, and no scanning will take place. Yes, in my example, I just, on the first scan, I stop the scanning and create a new connection. Yeah, and that's it. After that, we are connected and can proceed with service discovery, which is a topic on its own. There are also callbacks on the previous slide, we just call the connection create function, and that's it. It's also asynchronous. We get callbacks when the actual connection was established. You just declare a connection callbacks struct. There's some macro magic, but you can do it by yourself. And then you have these two callbacks registered there. You get the connection handle passed in and a potential error. And there you can put your application logic in there. So that's basically it for a simple Bluetooth host or a Bluetooth central device application with Zephyr that connects to the first available connectable device. Yes, now the big elephant in the room. My previous talk on a meetup was about service discovery, because that's a bit of a pain and the documentation is a bit lacking in my opinion, at least for starters like me. And we need to set up even more parameters and callbacks and then call into the Zephyr BLE stack, and the BLE stack calls us back with the results from our service discovery. So we have to walk through each service one by one and ask it what its what characteristics it have. We have to go through each service and ask it what characteristics it supports, and that sounds simple and straightforward, but it actually is not. So before we look at some problems, a rough overview of the API, we have a discover function that takes the connection and some parameters, and the parameters are a big struct already because there are several options to scan for services. We, for example, can't say we just want one service or proximity service, then we put in the UUID that we know of the service into the struct and then call gut discover. That works fine and easy, but we don't have a way to find out how much battery is left on the device, so we need to query for the battery service. And now we have a bit of a problem because we don't know if the battery service comes before the gut, before the proximity service or after it. And the way the service discovery works is we have this big list of attributes and it runs in there from back to front, and if we have to ask it twice, then we waste quite a lot of time if we are trying to discover multiple services. Also we have in line 6 the discover function. It's actually a function pointer, which is a callback. I just mentioned we are asynchronous again. We start the discovery, and if the communication with the other endpoint was done, we get a callback. And that's on this slide. We have a big struct again with the attributes that were found for our parameter. And that's basically the API we have to work with to discover all services available on the device. Yeah, and as I said, it's everything is asynchronous. If you write your code in a naive manner and just call btgetDiscover repeatedly, you will get out of order events because it just runs through the attributes one by one, and you get the characteristics and services intermixed, and it's not very useful. Yeah, that's just a bit of sample code. That's not even good code. As said, it didn't work, and we don't look to it at long. Yeah, the pitfalls, as I said, there's only API documentation and example code, no actual explanations why I have, or in what order I have to do proper proper service discovery. There is no example for multi-service discovery. If I want to query my device for its battery status and some other useful information, I already have to at least handle two different services. And there's no example for handling optional services. So I had a project where we tried to do a proximity tracker. And that profile, which requires several services to be present, you have either two services or you don't have them. So you have, I think, three services in total, but you have either three or one service. So you have, during discovery, to look, do I have one of these required services? Then I have to have the other one too. Or if only one is, it's not a proper device and I can't communicate with it properly. And getting that right was a bit tricky. And the system, the subsystem is quite big and complex. Most of the APIs are asynchronous. As I said, you get out of order events if you don't be careful. We have multi-threading issues. The callbacks are usually called from the receive thread, and there are several things you can't do in there. And if you try to, I don't remember right now, but I think if you try to disable the Bluetooth stack in one of the receive callbacks, then you will just get kernel panic from Zephyr, and yeah, we'll be wondering what happened. Yes, and some of these callbacks are called from interrupt, and you can't even start a timer in there. So that's a bit annoying because you don't always know what kind of callback you are just implementing. So hints for being productive. If you want to find out if you're called from the receive thread or from interrupt, the quickest thing usually is to look in the source code, do a search for the callback function pointer. And yeah, look for it. The code is correct usually, and the Doxygen rendering is also suboptimal. So looking at the code is really the best thing in my experience to find out what you need to do. And for interactions with other components during service discovery and even later is use an event loop or some other structure which decouples your callbacks from the actual application logic, so you are free to use whatever mechanism you want to like. There you can just allocate some memory and start timers and stuff. And it prevents the calls from the restrictions, from the problems from call restrictions. Yeah, I did a little demo. I can't really show it right now, but I had two dev boards, one Nordic dev board and an Infineon dev board, and the simple application just flashed fine on both, started up, and I had to have zero code changes on my application. So that was quite nice. Disclaimer, I had only a simple application which scans for devices, lists the services, and tries to connect on the right ones. And I didn't do any fancy power saving things. I've heard some rumors that there the things will get hairy with Zephyr, with the APIs. Yeah, a short word on the tooling. Unfortunately, I fell sick last week and I didn't finish my research into the tools. There is emulator support. This is basically copied from the documentation. We can either run our target application in QEMU, and or we can use the POSIX native simulator. Both are in theory Bluetooth enabled, but on my device I just got an invalid value, return value from the driver, and didn't have the time to debug into what the actual issue was. Yeah, but another thing for QEMU, you need the BT proxy utility. On my Linux distribution, which is Alma Linux, that isn't available. You have to get it from somewhere. I've compiled it. But as said, I couldn't debug it in the end. So where to go from here? I have a small demo project for the service discovery stuff, which I've tested on the boards, which is the one that worked fine, that has a central device part. I really like the Nordic Semiconductor introduction in their online academy website thingy. It has a really good introduction, overview introduction to Bluetooth low energy to get started if you don't have a clue. Even if you don't work this at Zephyr, I really found the Bluetooth part of their course pretty good. You can check out the specifications. It's big, but it's available online. And also the assigned numbers, because the specification itself doesn't contain any ID. So when you first look into the specifications, I'm wondering what's the UUID for the battery service. It's in a separate document. And also, Nordic Semi again, a bit of a fanboy I guess here. they have a pretty cool mobile app, the NRF Connect for Mobile. It's basically a generic debugger, so you can just start scanning from an Android app and connect to random devices and list their services and interact with them. It's pretty nice for debugging. And basically that's it. I'll be at the Zephyr table in Building K. Later with my dev boards, so you can come and chat, and you can also join the Zephyr community on Discord. It's pretty active. Yeah, that's basically it. I'm.
We have like 3 minutes for questions.
Sorry?
We have 3 minutes for
questions. Perfect.
Any questions?
You mentioned with the QEMU simulation the access to Bluetooth. Does this mean that the emulation will use the Bluetooth of your laptop and you can connect the Bluetooth devices?
Yes. You start the BT proxy utility and that forwards the HCI commands from the Zephyr applications to the Bluetooth controller. You need to deinitialize the Bluetooth controller. So fun fact, I also had to compile HCI control myself. So I could disable the Bluetooth controller for the operating system for Linux, and then Zephyr can take it over.
Okay. And if you would like to simulate or emulate the Bluetooth devices themselves?
You mean on the client side?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it works the same way. It's the HCI level, layer is shared between the central and the peripheral devices, so I think it just works the same way.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? Okay, if we don't have any questions, then thank you.
Cool, thank you for listening.